All right, so today we're going to be doing a deep dive on something that's actually surprisingly useful, and, you know, it might sound a little intimidating at first, but trust me, it's not just for calculus class.
That's right.
We're talking about derivatives, mm-hmm. and our source material today is What is a Derivative? By R. Scott McIntyre.
Great source.
Yeah, and what's really cool about this is that we'll see how these things, derivatives, pop up in some really unexpected places. Like, we're going to be looking at data science, and we'll even get a peek into how a spring works.
That's right.
So we'll be, you know, we'll understand these visually, their connection to optimization, and even take a peek into the world of, get this, infinite dimensions.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. But I know, you know, when you hear derivatives, you probably think, oh no, math, scary.
Yeah.
But don't worry, we're going to break down these concepts in a way that's clear, engaging, and honestly, even a little fun. What do you think?
I think that's very doable.
Yeah.
I think derivatives can seem intimidating, but the ideas are actually very intuitive.
Mm.
And so the first thing is like, what even is a derivative?
Yeah.
And so if you imagine looking at a curve, any curve, like a parabola or something, and you take a straight edge and you put it up against that curve at one particular point,
mm-hmm.
the derivative is the slope of that straight edge.
Yeah.
It's the best straight line approximation to the curve at that spot.
Okay, so I'm picturing like a line just kind of grazing that curve at that one tiny little point. And that line's slope, that's the derivative.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm getting that. I'm getting the visual. But
yeah.
Isn't there like a more formal way to define a derivative?
Yeah, so there's a more precise definition, and that is that it's a limit.
Okay.
So it's a way to capture how a function changes at a single point.
Mm.
If you imagine zooming in on that curve closer and closer and closer,
uh-huh.
the closer you get, the more that little section of the curve looks like a straight line.
Okay.
And so the derivative is the slope of that ultimate straight line.
Mm.
The one that you get when you've zoomed in as close as you can.
Yeah.
And here's where it gets really interesting. Remember how any straight line can be boiled down to just a single number? Its slope.
Right.
Well, it turns out that the derivative of a function at a particular point can also be represented by a single number. We call that fx.
Okay.
It's like a snapshot of the function's rate of change at that exact point.
So fx, that's like our little secret code that tells us exactly how steep the curve is at that specific spot.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm starting to get it. Now the big question. Why should we even care?
Yeah.
What's the point of knowing all this derivative stuff?
Well, it turns out that they're incredibly powerful for optimization.
Okay.
Finding the best, the most efficient way to do something, whether that's, you know, like a business trying to maximize their profits or designing the most fuel-efficient engine, or even, you know, something as simple as figuring out how to fold a box to maximize its volume.
Wait, hold on. You're telling me derivatives can help me, like, fold a box better?
It's true, yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. So our source material actually has this cool example about cutting squares from the corners of a sheet of metal to make a box.
Yeah.
And by using derivatives, you can figure out exactly how big to make those squares to get the box with the most volume possible.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It's all about finding that sweet spot, that point where the function hits its maximum or minimum value.
That's pretty neat. So it's not just about like abstract curves and slopes.
Yeah.
Derivatives actually have real world implications. Like we can actually use them to solve problems. But I have a feeling things are going to get even more interesting.
Because our outline mentioned something about derivatives in higher dimensions.
It does indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, things do get a little more abstract, but stay with me, because this is where they really start to shine.
Okay.
The concept of a derivative extends really beautifully to functions with multiple variables. So instead of just having one input and one output, you know, we're talking about functions that depend on maybe several inputs.
Right, several outputs. So think of something like, you know, maybe a function that determines how comfortable a room is.
Mm-hmm.
It might depend on the temperature and the humidity.
Gotcha. So instead of just a simple curve, we're dealing with a more complex, multidimensional surface.
Yeah, exactly.
And what happens to the derivative then? Does it get more complicated too?
It does evolve.
Yeah.
But the core idea is still the same. We're still trying to find the best linear approximation. But instead of a single number, instead of just a slope, we now have a vector.
Okay.
Called the gradient.
Okay.
And that's represented by this, it's called nabla, this upside down triangle, and then fx.
Okay.
You can think of a vector as just an arrow pointing in a particular direction. And so this gradient, it points in the direction of greatest increase for the function. Like if you were hiking up a mountain, the gradient would tell you which way to go to get to the top. the fastest.
So like a compass showing us the steepest path up that multidimensional mountain.
Exactly.
Okay, I like it. But how does all this connect to the real world? What can we actually do with gradients?
One of the coolest applications is in data science and machine learning.
Oh, yeah.
Think about trying to train some really complex AI model to recognize images or something.
Right.
You're basically trying to find the best settings for that model.
Okay.
To make it as accurate as possible.
Okay.
And so there's this algorithm called gradient descent that uses the gradient to kind of walk its way towards, step by step, to the best settings for the model. It's like that hiker constantly adjusting their path to find the lowest point in a valley.
So, like, the gradient is like the AI model's compass, guiding it to the best possible performance.
Yeah.
That is incredible. But wait a minute. Our deep dive today mentioned something even crazier. Derivatives with infinitely many variables.
It did.
That sounds like science fiction.
I know.
How is that even possible?
Okay. So, to get to that, we need to first talk about what's called functionals.
Functionals. Is that like functions of functions? I'm not even sure what that would look like.
You're on the right track. So a functional takes an entire function as its input instead of just a single number or a set of numbers. So it's like if you had a recipe and you put that entire recipe into this super advanced cooking machine and it spits out a meal, that's a functional. It operates on the entire recipe, the whole function, to produce an output.
Okay. So recipe goes in, meal comes out. I can picture that. But how on earth does this relate to physics?
Yeah.
And what does it have to do with derivatives? I know our source material mentioned a mass hanging from a spring.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with all this?
It's a perfect example of how this very abstract math actually describes the real world.
Okay.
So the path that that mass takes as it's bouncing up and down can be determined by finding the function that minimizes a certain functional.
Hold on. You're saying the motion of that mass is actually determined by, like, a math function?
Yeah.
That's wild. But how do we even find that function? You mentioned before about setting the derivative of the functional to zero. But how do you even take the derivative of something that operates on, like, whole functions? I'm so confused.
It does get complicated.
Yeah.
But the core idea is the same. You're looking for the flat spots.
Yeah.
Where the rate of change is zero.
Okay.
But now we're doing it in this much more abstract space.
So even though we're talking about functionals and infinite dimensions and stuff, we're still kind of applying the same basic principle of finding those critical points where the derivative is zero.
Exactly.
It's amazing how these ideas from calculus can be extended to, like, these mind-bendingly complex situations. It really is.
And when you set the derivative of this energy functional to zero, in the case of a mass on a spring, what you get is a differential equation.
Oh, right. Our source material actually used a differential equation to calculate the motion of the mass.
I see.
It's all coming together now.
Yeah.
We start with this super abstract idea of a functional describing the total energy of the system. Right. Then we set its derivative to zero, and boom, we get this concrete differential equation.
Yeah.
That we can actually solve to figure out exactly how that mass is going to move on the spring.
It's amazing, isn't it? Like, such an abstract concept can be used to predict real-world phenomenon.
It is.
It's really quite beautiful.
I'm starting to see how powerful this is. We're not just talking about, like equations on a chalkboard. We're talking about tools that can help us understand and model the world around us. But I think our deep dive also mentioned something about derivatives of functions that have multiple outputs. Can you give me a concrete example of that kind of function?
Yeah. So imagine you're designing the system to control the flight of a drone.
Okay.
So you need to keep track of its position in 3D space.
Right.
Right. So you have three coordinates, X, Y, and Z.
Gotcha.
So your function might take in time as the input, and then it spits out the X, Y, and Z coordinates of the drone at that time. So it's three outputs.
So instead of just one tangent line for the derivative, we'd need like three tangent lines, one for each output.
You're close. But instead of multiple tangent lines, we use something called a matrix to represent the derivative in this case.
Wait, a matrix? Isn't that like linear algebra stuff? What does that have to do with derivatives?
Well, remember, the derivative is all about finding the best linear approximation of a function.
Right.
It turns out matrices are perfect for representing linear transformations.
Oh, right.
So the matrix basically captures how each input variable affects each of the outputs. It's a compact and powerful way to represent that relationship.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this all ties together. Even when we're dealing with these more complicated functions, multiple inputs, multiple outputs, the core idea of the derivative as a linear approximation, it still holds true. We're just using these fancier tools like matrices to represent it.
Exactly. That's one of the things that's so powerful about the concept of a derivative. It provides this unifying framework for understanding change, optimization, behavior of complex systems across so many different fields.
Yeah.
But I think we've covered a lot of ground for part one of our deep dive.
We have. Welcome back to our deep dive on derivatives. I'm still thinking about this whole idea of derivatives with infinite variables, and especially how that connects to that that example of a mass on a spring. Can you remind me how functionals fit into all this?
Sure. So remember, a functional takes in a whole function as its input, not just a number. So it's kind of like a function that operates on functions. And in physics, those functionals often represent something like the total energy of a system.
So like for that mass bouncing on the spring, the functional would describe the energy of that whole system at any given moment.
Yeah.
That's a really neat way to think about it, like a snapshot of the energy stored in the spring and the mass as it's moving.
Exactly. And here's where it gets really cool. So nature tends to want to find states where energy is minimized.
Okay.
So think about like a ball rolling down a hill.
Right.
It's going to naturally settle at the bottom where the potential energy is the lowest.
Right.
And so this principle is called the principle of least action.
Okay.
And it's fundamental to physics.
So you're saying that the path that that mass takes on the spring, it's actually the one that uses the least amount of energy over time. That kind of seems, I don't know, that seems kind of counterintuitive. Wouldn't it take like more energy for it to keep bouncing up and down?
It might seem that way.
Yeah.
But think about it in terms of potential and kinetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
So as the mass stretches the spring, it's storing potential energy.
Okay.
Right. Then as the spring pulls it back, that potential energy gets converted into kinetic energy.
Right. The energy of motion.
Yeah. And this exchange back and forth between potential and kinetic energy, it continues as the mass bounces.
Right.
But the total energy of the system stays constant.
Okay.
And the path that minimizes the functional, which in this case represents the total energy,
right,
that's the path that describes that nice smooth exchange.
Okay. I think I'm starting to see how this works. So we have this functional that represents the total energy of the system.
Right.
And then the actual motion of the mass, it follows the path that minimizes that energy functional. But how do we actually, like, how do we find that path mathematically?
Yeah.
You mentioned setting the derivative of the functional to zero, but how do you take the derivative of something that's operating on, like, whole functions?
So that's where things get more complex. But the core idea is still the same.
Okay.
We're looking for those flat spots.
Right.
Those points where the rate of change is zero. It's just that now we're doing it in this much more abstract space.
So even though we're dealing with this idea of a functional and like infinite dimensions, we're still basically using those same like calculus principles of finding those points where the derivative is zero.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. It's amazing how these ideas from calculus can be extended to such like complicated mind-bending scenarios.
And when you set the derivative of that energy functional to zero, in the case of the mass on the spring, you get what's called a differential equation.
Oh, right, because our source material actually used a differential equation to calculate the motion of the mass, didn't it? It's all making sense now.
Yeah.
So we start with this super abstract idea of a functional,
right,
describing the total energy of the system. We set its derivative to zero, and bam, we get this concrete differential equation that we can actually solve to figure out exactly how that mass is going to move.
That's right. It's a great example of how an abstract mathematical concept can be used to predict a real-world phenomenon.
Yeah. It really is. I'm starting to see how powerful this stuff is. We're not just talking about like equations on a whiteboard. This is we're talking about tools that can actually be used to understand and model the world around us.
Yeah.
But you know, our deep dive also mentioned something about derivatives of functions that have multiple outputs.
It did.
Can you maybe give me like a concrete example of that? Like what kind of function would have multiple outputs?
Sure, yeah. So imagine you're designing a system to control the flight of a drone.
Okay.
And you need to keep track of its position.
Right.
Which is in 3D space. So you need three coordinates, X, Y, and Z.
Gotcha.
So your function might take in time as the input.
Okay.
And it outputs the X, Y, and Z coordinates of the drone at that time. So there's your three outputs.
Okay, so instead of just one tangent line for the derivative, we'd need like three tangent lines, one for each output.
You're close. But instead of multiple tangent lines, we use what's called a matrix.
Wait, a matrix? Isn't that like linear algebra? What does that have to do with derivatives?
Well, remember, the derivative is all about finding the best linear approximation of a function at a point.
Right, right, yeah.
And matrices are really good at representing linear transformations.
Okay.
So the matrix, it basically captures how each input variable affects each of the outputs. It's a really concise way to represent that whole relationship.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm starting to see how this all connects, even when we're dealing with these like more complicated functions, multiple inputs, multiple outputs. The core idea of the derivative as this linear approximation, it still holds true.
Exactly.
It's just we're using these, you know, fancier tools like matrices to represent it.
It's one of the things that's so powerful about derivatives,
yeah,
is that it provides this framework for understanding change, optimization, the behavior of complex systems. And it's crossed so many different fields.
Absolutely.
But I think we've covered a lot of ground in part two of our deep dives.
We're back for the final part of our deep dive on derivatives. I gotta say, this has been one of the most like mind-expanding deep dives we've done yet. Who knew that something as like simple as a slope could lead to such complex and fascinating ideas?
It's been quite a journey, hasn't it?
It really has. We've gone from, you know, basic slopes to gradients, functionals, differential equations, even matrices.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But I think this really shows how powerful the concept of a derivative is.
I agree.
And how versatile it is. One thing that really stuck with me is this idea that, like, even when we're dealing with these crazy complex scenarios with infinite variables, we're still essentially just looking for those flat spots, those points where the rate of change is zero. It's like this principle just keeps popping up everywhere.
That's a really great point. It speaks to the elegance and universality of mathematics, I think.
Yeah.
That no matter how complicated something seems, the underlying principles are often quite simple. And derivatives really help us, I think, uncover that underlying order.
Yeah.
You know, see those patterns and connections that might otherwise be hidden.
It's like having the superpower, you know, like to be able to see the structure of the universe and then like manipulate it to do what you want it to do.
Yeah.
Whether we're trying to, you know, optimize a business model or design a better engine or train, like a super smart AI, derivatives provide this like framework for understanding how things change and how we can influence those changes.
Exactly. And, you know, we may not all be mathematicians, but I think there's something really empowering about understanding these fundamental concepts. It helps us appreciate the beauty and the power of mathematical thinking.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up this deep dive, is there like one key takeaway that you hope our listeners walk away with?
I would say don't be intimidated by the word derivative.
Yeah.
It's not just this abstract mathematical concept that's confined to textbooks.
Right.
It's this incredibly powerful tool that has applications in so many different areas. And the more you explore it, the more you'll discover its beauty and its utility. You might even start to see derivatives everywhere you look.
Oh, absolutely. Once you start to see the world through that lens of derivatives, it really does like open up this whole new level of understanding. So to our listeners out there, I hope you've enjoyed this deep dive.
Yeah.
And are inspired to, you know, learn more about derivatives and see what cool insights you might uncover.
Yeah, definitely. And if you have any questions or any requests for future deep dives, please don't hesitate to reach out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Until next time, happy learning, everyone.